And happy holidays. This is yet another episode of Let's Weekend. Thank you all to our folks all over the world listening in. I am your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Logie and Teresa Sammons. Say hi to the good people.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, so it is December 23rd, 2022, 2 days before Christmas. And this is going to be our last show of the year, I think. Let me check.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be probably taking New Year's off. Yeah, so it is, I mean, let's be honest. If you're here in the U.S., you know what I'm going to say. It's fucking freezing right now.
It is.
There was this nasty nor'easter that decided to come in about a week ago, and it basically just swept all over the United States, and now temperatures have pretty much dropped pretty much everywhere east of the Rio Grande. It's currently 22 degrees right now where I'm at.
That's crazy cold.
Yeah, for Georgia especially.
Yeah.
And I know from Teresa, you know, who was in Kentucky recently, or are you still in Kentucky right now, or did you come back?
No, I was there for Thanksgiving. No, I'm home.
Yeah.
So.
But apparently over in Kentucky, it dropped down to like zero for a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a nice place to be.
Yeah. And of course, zero. Yeah, oh, and of yeah. course. And of course, Chris, being in Cleveland, I'm going to guess that it's basically dropped down to the negative digits.
Well, Canton, but yeah, our high at 2 a.m. was 41 degrees.
Yeah.
And while I was streaming earlier, it was at 5 below 0.
Yeah.
That's not with wind chill.
Nope.
Wind chill is at like negative 24, probably. We're on negative 30 at the lowest point today.
Yeah. Has it gotten to the point where you can like just take a like a cup of hot water and throw it in the air and make snow?
Yes, yep. It is.
I don't know, I wouldn't try that.
I would not blame you. This is nobody should go out in such an ungodly weather, but
no.
Anyway, for this week's show, and of course, basically the last show of the year, some stuff that, of course, happened. More than anything, probably one of the big stories is that we got the last and final meeting from the January 6th committee, where they gave their recommendations and referred some stuff to the Department of Justice. We'll be telling you about that. We also got their big spending package done to keep funding the government through the rest of the year, through into next year, I guess. We found out what Trump's tax returns are. Yeah, it's about as bad as you expected it would be. The TSA has basically broken their record for, well, you'll find out. Let's just say it's very, very American. And probably also kind of shows that the TSA kind of sucks at their job. And of course, Elon Musk is still turning Twitter into a fucking, well, I say turning it into a cesspool. Twitter was already a fucking cesspool before he got it. It was just, he just stopped pouring the chlorine in. of course, we got all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, to start us off, as always, Chris, what have you been up to this week?
Besides freezing today and having to go into work like that.
Mm-hmm.
No.
And dealing with the fun of roads that weren't like plowed or treated, though.
Mm-hmm.
The major part of the wind chill being so low is because we were getting gusts up to like 60 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Of wind. So that makes it hard for pretty much any plowed snow to stay where it's supposed to be.
Mm.
So that's the fun bit, though. I did get on the way home. The roads were a bit better,
mm-hmm.
At least on the highways. But people still were driving slow on it, so that was a fun time dealing with that. But for things I've been doing, managed to get around to watching A Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery that just came out today. The newest of Ryan Johnson's sort of murder mystery movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very good. The trailers did a good job of concealing sort of what the movie is really about. Because the way they framed a lot of things, put it in a different context than it really is. So it does a good job of giving you an idea of what's going on, but also no idea what's going on. So I definitely recommend checking that out. Very good. Very good cast. All that kind of stuff. Very good time. Also managed to get to watching Alice in Borderland Season 2. Haven't finished it. I'm maybe on Episode 3. So just getting started. That came out yesterday. So looking forward to watching more of that. Basically, the gist is that the stakes have been kicked up a notch. So making for some interesting new elements to these games. So looking forward to watching more of that. Let's see. For games, I've been playing some stuff here. Playing some holiday stuff as I was streaming this week. One of them was Costume Quest, the Grubbins on Ice DLC, which is a nice little extra campaign. Luckily, it isn't too long. It's like about 2 hours or so. Managed to get that beaten. Enjoyed it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Though still dealing with some of the quirks of Costume Quest, where if you get into battle, you can kind of skip your intros into fights, but you can't skip the long ultimates that you can build up. So just kind of adds a little bit of tediousness to it. But this campaign is just about 2 hours, so it's nothing where it's too big of an issue. I think I have one Steam achievement left to get on this, which is to play Costume Quest on Christmas Day. So that's the last thing. But other than that, that's been good. The other game I've been playing, Pinball Heroes, one of the new PlayStation Plus premium games. It's a PSP game originally, where Sony made a bunch of pinball versions of their properties. The pinball is fine. Nothing really amazing about it. But it seems to have easy trophies, so that's an added bonus. Mostly trophies for trying each of the tables at least once. One for getting high scores on them. And then there are a few others for reaching some numbers of doing various things. So nothing too complicated out of it, but yeah, pretty solid game there. And the other one I've been playing is Rocket League. Still working on the big winter event that they got going on, working through that, but that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Teresa?
Yeah, Teresa, what about you?
Yeah, funny you should mention pinball. I forgot one that I started, this week and, didn't get back to, Yoku's Island Express, which has been around for a while. I started that, but I haven't gotten very far in it at all. And, like the pinball elements, pretty cool. But mostly I've been playing Final Fantasy 14 a lot.
What else is there?
Yeah, right. But I did, I think Sunday, play some Mario Kart Online with Pat Mifflin and also with one of our other friends. I don't know if I should mention names, but yeah. Yeah, we had a little bit of fun playing around. So that was neat. Pat had not tried the Nintendo Online voice thing, which, you know, I've used it before. It's not all that great. Discord voice works just fine. So we were doing that. And I've been watching some random TV stuff, but honestly, like, not a lot. So... I mean, I'm sure I watched some things that I can't remember. I've been watching through Sex Education, which is a fun British comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much it, other than, you know, just the whole holiday everything.
Mm-hmm.
And also freezing. But yeah, I keep, whenever I did leave the condo today... And I'm talking about my unit. I didn't leave the building, and I am not going to until I have to go to my cousin's tomorrow. Yeah, I was walking around the hallways with a big blanket wrapped around me because, damn. But that's it. What about you, Brandon?
Well, other than the fact that I am staying as close as I possibly can at all times to the radiator because it is fucking freezing down here. I've been playing a couple of different things. I recently played and finished Soccer Story. I finished it last night. I had been under the impression that this was made by the same guys who did Golf Story. That is a mistake on my part. It is not. But it was all right. It was the more or less the issue with it was that it tried to kind of do what Golf Story did, but it just wasn't as good at it as the people who did Golf Story did it. The writing wasn't really there. The world, I say world building, like Golf Story had extensive lore when it was just random as fuck. The difference, though, is that with Golf Story, it kind of worked. With this, it kind of just comes off as, I don't know, it just comes off very inconsistent. And the actual, like, soccer in the game is not terribly complicated, which you would think, oh, yeah, that's the point. The problem, though, is that the AI is both too hard and not hard enough. Because if you try to play this like a regular soccer game, you will get your ass handed to you. But if you try to basically game it, you know, you'll basically outdo them like every time by like you'll be ending the game with like to like 12 to nothing, and that's including like the last final game up against like the quote unquote bosses that you have to go up against. It was all right, it was fun. The other problem, of course, is that unlike Golf Story, where they took the sort of overall golf mechanic and found like a bunch of different ways to work with it, they didn't really do that very well here either. Like, you have a magic soccer ball, and what do with a soccer ball? You kick it, you know? And you think, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways, you know, creative ways they could do that. And they came up with a couple, but nothing really significant. It was all right. Not as good as Golf Story. The people who do Golf Story actually just released their newest game, which was Sports Story, on the Switch. And I'm hoping to get that hopefully not too long from now. Other than that, I've also been playing more of Eastward, which, again, is a very fun game. It's essentially Earthbound Zelda, and that's a pretty good way to describe it. It is one of those games, much like Earthbound. Well, I mean, it plays a lot like Zelda, but it has that sort of oddball sort of humor and world building, but has like that really dark sort of layer underneath it that Earthbound has. And boy, this game definitely does that. Other than that, you know, just watching some movies. I was rewatching the first Alien here's something about me you may not know. I've never seen the original Aliens. Oh. I've seen the first Alien movie. I've never seen Aliens.
So now do you get the South Park reference?
Yeah, I get the South Park reference now. But yeah, I've seen the first Alien, never seen Aliens. And I know I'm going to be seeing it soon because I'm going to get it. I asked for it on my Christmas list for Blu-ray, and I'm going to be getting it. I know I did because I saw it in the package when it arrived in the mail the other day. it's James Cameron. I mean, he's never made a bad movie. So, and I mean, this was like the movie he made after Terminator. And it just, like, knocked everyone out of the park. I'm like, okay, I definitely need to see this then. Other movie I saw was this movie called Tetsuo the Iron Man. I don't know how to describe this. Imagine a Cronenberg movie if it was made as a Japanese art house film. That's basically Tetsuo the Iron Man. It's basically about this dude who accidentally kills this guy who's like a salary man who has like a weird like metal fetish. He likes to like stick pieces of metal into himself. And so as his punishment, the guy who killed him starts having like pieces of weird like metal and industrial wiring start sprouting out of his body. Yeah, it's like very freaky, but it's pretty damn good. Really, other than that, just the fact that it's just unbelievably fucking cold. I mean, it's winter, you know, it's supposed to get cold, but, you know...
This is a bit much.
Yeah, this is a little too much. Especially here in Georgia, where, like, cold for us is, like, maybe, like, 40 or 45. And right now it's like 21 degrees outside. You know, that's unnatural. So that is basically everything I've done. Do you guys got anything you want to add before we move on?
No.
No? Alrighty then. Well, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, last week, I talked very briefly about some of the weird sort of... Because as I usually do this time of year, I'll talk a little bit about some of the odd Christmas traditions that are come about all through Christendom. What I didn't expect is we'd have one more show before Christmas actually happened. So this week, I'm going to talk about something that is vaguely related to Christmas. And also, because I recently saw somebody play through this on YouTube recently, and I'm like, holy shit, I forgot that existed, and I kind of want to play it again. Okay, so, quick question to you guys. Yes or no? Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Yes.
Teresa?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
All right, so, with that, you know, sort of established, that means that what I'm about to talk about is vaguely Christmas-related. Okay, I don't want to talk about the Die Hard movies. Or, honestly, the first two Die Hard movies. The ones after that are kind of shit. But I want to talk about one of the things that's kind of a spinoff of it. Kind of. It wasn't originally supposed to be a spinoff of it. But it kind of ended up becoming one when it made its way over here. That is about the classic arcade beat-em-up that I know when I was younger, I wasted so many hours and... so many quarters and tokens on Die Hard Arcade. And honestly, I kind of wish that Pat was here because he could pretty much just go down memory lane with me. Okay, so does anybody, have any of you guys ever played or heard?
No, this first.
Okay, so originally this game was called Dynamite Deca or Dynamite Detective in Japan. And what it was is, it was a game made by AM1, which, you know, was Sega's AM Research and Development number one, and also the Technical Institute, you know. And essentially what it was is you were, well, I say you, but there's actually two characters that you can play because it can be a two-player co-op game. Originally, there was these two cops, detectives, whatever you want to call them. One was named Bruno Dellinger and the other was named Cindy Holliday, man and woman, who are trying to save the president's daughter from terrorists. Now, in the English version, they're identified as John McClane and Chris Thompson. But basically, if you remembered in the original, original Die Hard, you know, like most of the movie takes place around this high rise that, you know, John McClane is having to get around. Which, you know, that's basically what this game is. It's a beat 'em up that mostly takes place entirely inside this high rise. And I'm guessing supposed to be New York. So that's kind of why they decided to just throw the Die Hard license onto it. But basically, you're having to go against all these henchmen of these terrorists. There's, you know, your regular, like, gangster looking goons that you see in, like, you know, Final Fight and stuff like that. Then there's the bikers, the occasional ninjas. There's some spider robots that show up for some reason. There's a Mexican wrestler named Jocko. There's a tag team of a guy named Mr. Oishi, who's a sumo wrestler, and a guy named Mr. Tubbs, who's supposed to be like a ex-army guy. There's a fire chief armed with grenades, and he's got like his henchmen in the back in the fire truck, like spraying water at you. And then, of course, there's the final boss himself, who's like this old dude with a beard and a sword named Wolf Hongo. And then if you end up finishing the game with two different co-op players, you then have to fight each other so that only one of you can gain the sole appreciation of the president's daughter. Basically, think of like how Double Dragon ended. What was cool about this game is, one thing, for a beat-em-up, its combat system was surprisingly sophisticated. A lot of people back then actually directly compared it to, you know, to Virtua Fighter. Especially because it used a lot of combos as well. And it was actually, on top of that, I very distinctly remember this being like the first beat-em-up game I played where one of the weapons among, you know how like in like Final Fight, like all the weapons are like blunt instruments? You know, there's like a pipe, or maybe there's a knife you can throw, some chains, stuff like that. In Die Hard Arcade, you had shit like pistols and Uzis and a rocket launcher that you could pick up. An anti-tank rifle. And yeah. And I remember very distinctly like playing this for the first time in the arcade. It's like, I had never come across a beat-em-up game where you could actually pick up guns. Now there would be like a later game that would, some other games like later on that would do that, but this was like the first time for me. And it was kind of, there was even a thing where you could get like a aerosol spray can and you can use that and it'll do damage. But if you manage to find like a cigarette lighter, you can then make a flamethrower. yeah. And keep in mind, this is like a game that came out in like 1996. So it's very polygonal. And oh yeah, and I forgot, it also had quick time events. That was another thing. There were like these things that would happen where like you would be running down a hallway and then out of nowhere, like an enemy would show up. Like maybe they come through a door or they jump down from a balcony and you had to like punch or kick them in time and you could just go past. If you didn't, they would land a hit on you and then you would just have to fight them for real. Then there were also ones where it's like, you know, something's about to blow up, you got to jump in time. And what was funny is because every so often it would happen and you would think after it was over, you're like, wait, were those guys actually part of the terrorists or were they just some random fucker who was in the wrong place at the wrong time? There's this one part where there's this blonde woman in like a pink pantsuit walking out of the door and you end up punching her and it's like, was she with the terrorists or was she just like a secretary or something? yeah. But yeah, that was Die Hard Arcade. If you ever have like a old like retro arcade you can go to, there's a good chance it's probably got a machine there. Go there and play it because it is, even all these years later, it is shockingly still a lot of fun. Yeah. That's been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So, yeah.
You want to know something fun about Die Hard?
What's that?
You know Holly Gennaro, the actress?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know that she is the aunt of Macaulay and Kieran Culkin?
Yep.
She's a Culkin.
Mm-hmm. Ha. Yeah.
Her brother was their father.
Yeah. And then there, of course, there was a dude who plays the police chief, and he ended up, you know, ending up playing the dad on Family Matters. But, yeah. But anyway, so with that out of the way, it is now time for the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is probably not going to be a big surprise to you. See, GOP recently had a new House representative that got elected in New York. And now we found out that basically his entire biography is a lie. Like, all of it. Literally, like, even the most minute details are bullshit.
Yeah, a bunch of it is fake.
His name is George Santos, by the way. And just, yeah, go ahead, Chris. It's just, it's amazing.
Yeah, so, let's see. Story in the New York Times that appeared to show the key details of his official campaign bio were fabricated. And, of course, the chairman of Nassau County's Republican Committee, Joseph Caro, says, I believe that George Santos deserves an opportunity to address the claims detailed in the article. Every person deserves an opportunity to clear his or her name in the face of accusations. Mm-hmm. I believe he has put out a statement that was that did not refute anything.
Nope.
So, yeah, that's...
Well, there was apparently somebody did, like, not only did it not refute anything, it also tried to, like, you know, it's because, you know, Santos represents a threat to the progressive left, you know.
Yeah, but, stuff like yeah. That. He claimed to have graduated from Baruch College with a bachelor's degree in economics and finance. And Baruch College, in response to NPR's request here, said it checked its records for George Santos, born on July 22nd, 1988, the graduation year of 2010, and could not find a match. And they released a statement on Twitter late Monday afternoon from an attorney representing Santos. There's no surprise that Congressman-elect Santos' enemies at the New York Times were attempting to smear his good name with these defamatory allegations. Which is like, if they're false allegations, then prove that he has a degree there. And apparently they can't. However, Murray offered no facts, evidence, or documents to contradict the Times article, which also found Santos appeared to have fabricated key details of his business career. Frequently pointed to his success outside politics as an example of the American dream. Let's see. Yeah, citing Citigroup and Goldman Sachs's places he had worked. They told the New York Times they had no record of Santos working for their firms, as a candidate claimed in his bio. City spokesman said they were unable to confirm Mr. Santos's employment with Citi. And Goldman Sachs said, we have no record of his employment. He is also gay. Claimed an interview with WNYC Public Radio last month that his employees died in 2016 when a gunman opened fire at the Pulse, a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida. I happened to, at the time, have people that worked for me in the club. My company at the time, we lost 4 employees that were at Pulse. And he added that he has tragic memories of that deadly mass shooting. But the New York Times investigation can find no link between any of the 49 victims and companies or firms linked to Santos.
Yep.
So,
but it gets worse.
Yeah. But yeah, it's unclear how these accusations might affect Santos and his ability to take office, as obviously a lot of people think, oh, he had a bunch of lies to the sort of person he is, but the Republicans don't want to give up a seat.
Mm-hmm. So
they just will not do anything here. So yeah. Especially because the last tweet that Santos had put out before this article, we had the opportunity of a lifetime to deliver real results for the American people. We must give the gavel to Kevin McCarthy as House Speaker. That's as much as he has pushed out there.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know if you mentioned this, but one of the other big lies he had, some relatives who died in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
What a piece of shit.
Yeah, the dude is a straight up compulsive liar.
Yeah, just like Trump.
Hence why, you know, they related so well. God, Lord. But anyway, that wasn't our only asshole of the week. We've also got this, well, now former Catholic priest that was recently defrocked by the Vatican, an anti-abortion priest that once placed an aborted fetus on an altar. And I guess, like, kept in, like, a jar or something.
Yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, the reasons claimed were blasphemous communications on social media as well as persistence persistent disobedience to the bishop
mm-hmm.
in that area. And yeah, they said the decision against Frank Pavone, who heads the anti-abortion group Priests for Life, had been taken November 9th, and then there was no chance for an appeal. Had been investigated by then Diocese of Amarillo, Texas, for having placed an aborted fetus on an altar, posting video of it on two social media sites in 2016. Post frequently about U.S. politics and abortion, and the video of the aborted fetus was accompanied by a post saying that Hillary Clinton and the Democratic platform allowed abortion to continue, that Donald Trump and the Republican platform wanted to protect unborn children.
Mm-hmm.
He remains a firm supporter of Trump. His Twitter handle features him wearing a MAGA hat with a background photo featuring the former U.S. president. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there you go for that. And a tweet Sunday, Pavone sounded defiant, comparing his fate to that of the unborn. So in every profession, including the priesthood, if you defend the unborn, the hashtag unborn, you will be treated like them. The only difference is that when we are aborted, in scare quotes, we continue to speak loud and clear. His supporters immediately denounced the measure, including the Bishop of Tyler, Texas, Joseph Strickland, who referred to U.S. President Joe Biden's support for abortion rights as evil. So, yeah. This
well,
guy,
go ahead. Well, go ahead and start your own church then.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
See, it seems even the Catholic, even the Vatican is like, okay, maybe we need to start sort of reining in some of this shit.
Right.
Because, yeah, not a good look, dude. But anyway, next up, Harvey Weinstein has been found guilty on 3 charges in a new L.A. trial. What else is fucking new?
He is already convicted of rape and sexual assault in New York and is serving a 23-year prison sentence there at 70 years old right now.
Mm-hmm.
I was convicted on 3 of 7 charges in his second sex crimes trial, this time in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
The jury was unable to reach a verdict on 3 of the charges. Three more charges. I'm not sure where the charges are at here, but they tried to discredit the 3 women that testified here. One of which is the current California governor's wife, Gavin Newsom. Jennifer Siebel Newsom.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about her encounters with him nearly 20 years ago. And she was an aspiring actress and filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
That's continue good riddance to him.
Mm-hmm.
Faces a possible sentence of 24 years in prison for his L.A. conviction. Which would definitely mean he stays behind bars for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, Tory Lanez has actually been found guilty of shooting Megan Thee Stallion. Now, this happened back in, I think it was 2020. There had been reports that she had to go to get surgery to remove some bullets. And apparently she pointed the finger at this guy, and he got convicted of it this week.
Yeah, Tory Lanez. Another rapper that had some sort of dispute with her on July 12th, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
After the rappers left a pool party at Kylie Jenner's house in L.A., Lanez stood trial for 3 felony charges: assault with a semiautomatic firearm, possession of a concealed unregistered firearm, negligent discharge of a firearm. He was accused of assaulting Megan Thee Stallion by shooting her in both feet after an argument in a vehicle leaving the party spilled out onto the street around 4 a.m. And yeah, this was an infamous event because basically a lot of disinformation came out of this. As people claimed, it was really glass. And that's like an initial statement suggested it might be glass kind of thing. So how could she get shot if it was glass? And obviously, when they actually did the surgery to pull out what was in there and found bullets, or a bullet, that when she revealed that, it's very much was like a lot of accusations of lying and being distrustful because she's the woman, so she can't obviously be telling the truth and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that was a whole thing here. But yeah, she finally ends up the victor, clearing her name and all this. And Tory Lanez will have to deal with the aftermath. He's facing up to 22 years in prison for the felony charges.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And finally, last asshole of the week we got. A court in Germany convicted a 97-year-old that was a secretary at a concentration camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see. German court on Tuesday convicted a 97-year-old woman of being an accessory to murder for her role as a secretary to the SS commander of the Nazis Stutthof concentration camp during World War II. He was accused of being part of the apparatus that helped the camp function. The Itzehoe State Court in Northern Germany gave her a 2-year suspended sentence. She was alleged to have, quote, aided and abetted those in charge of the camp in the systematic killing of those imprisoned there between June 1943 and April 1945, in her function as a stenographer and typist in the camp commandant's office.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the verdict and sentence were in line with the prosecutor's demands.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there you go.
Yeah. All right.
But yeah, she was tried in juvenile court because she was under 21 at the time of the alleged crimes, which is interesting.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, but, I mean, yeah, Germans. And yeah, they're, you know, they're having to kind of ramp this up because a lot of these people are kind of dropping like flies, are at the age where they're dropping like flies now, so... They're trying to get as many like not old Nazis that they can get into court before they die. So, yeah.
Yeah.
One more. But fortunately, it's not all bad because we do have our heroes of the week. And our heroes of the week this week are the January 6th committee because they ended their final meeting by, among other things, voting to recommend 4 criminal charges for Donald Trump to the Department of Justice and... They've also recommended that he be barred from taking office ever again.
Yeah. Yeah, let me see if I can see where they have the specific charges here they're recommending. Yeah, conspiracy to defraud the federal government, obstruction of an official proceeding, in this case Congress's certification of electoral votes, conspiracy to make a false statement, and inciting or assisting those in an insurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also potentially recommending charges for his attorney, John Eastman, who the committee says was the architect of the scheme to pressure then Vice President Mike Pence to reject states' electoral votes on January 6th and have fake electors submitted to the Congress instead. And yeah, also referred 4 Republican members of Congress to the House Ethics Committee for defying subpoenas from the committee earlier this year, including House Minority Leader and potential incoming Speaker Kevin McCarthy, Jim Jordan, I expect to be the next chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Andy Biggs, and Scott Perry. So yeah, there you go. Obviously, these are not like formal charges. They're basically submitting their findings. They put out the full report now and are saying, here are the... where the facts have led us to suggest that these would be fitting charges. The DOJ has their own independent person sort of going through all the evidence here and will come to their own conclusion. So hopefully it leads them to the same place and we can finally stop Trump from running for office over the... Something? Yeah, over the various charges and transgressions he has committed just for this one thing.
All right. Okay, then. So, with that out of the way, it's now time for the proper show proper. And the first part of the proper show proper will be the story here. Congress managed to pass a $1.7 trillion spending package before the deadline, which, of course, was today. And, of course, being that it's a spending package, that, of course, means there's a bunch of other stuff that's put in there, like some gun control measures, some stuff regarding healthcare, stuff like that. But yeah.
Yeah. The House voted 225 to 201 Friday afternoon. That I believe AOC is the only Democrat to have voted against it.
Mm-hmm.
But 9 Republicans voted with the other Dems.
Yeah.
For that. So yeah, there you go for that. One of the big things that is a part of this is the Electoral Count Act, which reforms parts of the Electoral Count Act that will make it harder for Trump to try to pull what he tried to pull last time around. So
yeah,
that's great. Also adds provisions to expand federal protections for pregnant workers, which is great. There's a bunch of this. I think about half of this is for just the defense spending for the next year. It's like 800 and something billion dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, people, Republicans are complaining about money going to Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's not a great idea to help Ukraine just systematically destroy the Russian military over there in a way that doesn't risk our own people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's much cheaper than going to war directly.
Yeah. So all that happened. So, and for those who don't remember, the new Congress convenes like fairly early next month, I think. And man, that's going to be fun because I'm still thinking they're probably not going to have a real nominee for speaker by that point.
Possible.
It's just going to be fucking chaos. But
yeah.
Anyway, next up, we finally got Trump's tax returns this week. And we got a report on them, and it showed that, among other things, well, for one thing, it showed that all that time he kept saying about how he was always under audit, yeah, it was bullshit. He was never under audit. In fact, the resources required for such a thing from the IRS did not exist. The IRS literally lacked the resources to do those mandatory audits.
Yeah, they have an IRS presidential audit program that is supposed to just go through their tax returns, just make sure everything's on the up and up.
Yeah.
And Trump did not get his 2016 tax returns through this program until the fall of 2019.
Yep.
Basically the last year in his office.
Yep, the last year in his presidency.
And yeah, that's not great. Especially when he's claiming that, you know, I can't release any of these things because they're under audit, even though the IRS kept saying that doesn't mean anything. You can still release them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a big part of it. But yeah, part of it was that they just did not have the resources to go through his tax returns, which is mainly because for the past 20 years or so, Republicans have sort of systematically lessen the budget of the IRS, their ability to, you know, staff up appropriately to deal with mainly rich people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's almost like that was by design or something.
Yeah. And even working with the various tax return companies to prohibit the IRS from doing the, you know, automatic taxes statements that they would send out at the end of the year, tell you like, this is what you owe, or this is what we owe you, you know, pay that, or, you know, expect a check from us at some points that most other countries do. Instead, you have to go through very confusing paperwork, if not software, websites, whatever, that especially when there's supposed to be free options, they try to hide that stuff. That's also part of this whole scheme as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know that we have full details from everything, but we do have numbers and such here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he paid a combined $1.1 million in federal income taxes in 2018 and 2019.
Mm-hmm.
a stark contrast to the $750 he paid in 2017 and $0 in 2020. His taxable income in 2018 was nearly $23 million, which included a $22 million capital gain. They actually reported $3 million in taxable income with a capital gain of $9 million. In 2020, he reported losses of over $16 million, large enough to reduce his federal income tax bill that year to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And for many years prior to his running for president, New York Times investigation showed that Trump had claimed huge net operating losses that he was allowed to carry forward and applied to future tax years, which greatly reduced or wiped out his annual income tax liability.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like, how do you get those sort of losses? As well as questions about charitable deductions in here, where in 2015, he claimed a $21.1 million deduction for donating 158 acres of his 212-acre property called Seven Springs in Newcastle, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Donation which was made to a land trust is a focus of Manhattan District Attorney's criminal investigation of the Trump Organization's finances. But they're also like donations that he donated to his children
mm-hmm.
that are very much under question of like, are these really donations? Are these, gifts that they claim as donations so they can take deductions out of it, you know, when they're, he's getting them straight to his family, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all sorts of things that rich people get to do to get around paying their fair share. Kind of stuff that really shouldn't happen. If you had a properly funded and staffed IRS, rich people could be actually forced to pay their mm-hmm. fair share and scrutinized to the degree that they scrutinize everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, important to mention that spending package we just talked about, yeah, it includes some more funding for the IRS as well. Which is sort of why, like, the GOP has been going DEFCON 1 on the fact that they're expanding the IRS. Because it's specifically to do shit like this. but yeah, moving on. The United States Postal Service is actually pledging to move to an all-electric delivery fleet. So,
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, they said it will sharply increase the number of electric-powered delivery trucks.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go all electric for new purchases starting in 2026.
Yeah.
They said they're spending nearly $10 billion to electrify its aging fleet, including installing a modern charging infrastructure at hundreds of postal facilities nationwide and purchasing at least 66,000 electric delivery trucks the next 5 years. Spending includes $3 billion in funding approved under a landmark climate and health policy adopted by Congress last year. So yeah, that's great news. Some of the most used vehicles in the country are going to finally be changing over to electric.
Mm. Yep. Good shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of this is pretty much what's going to start happening. A lot of our like big government programs that require vehicles are going to be switching over to electric. Access to electric cars gets, you know, more widespread, you know, it'll hopefully do a lot of good. But anyway, next up, the TSA announced that they had broken their record for most guns found in carry-on bags with just 2 weeks left in 2022. Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, it is at, let's see, 6,301 firearms,
mm-hmm.
Most of which were loaded. And expect to find some 300 more before the year is over with 2 weeks left. Yeah. That's not great. Mm-hmm. Their previous record was set last year at 5,972.
Mm-hmm.
So blew past that by about 330 some. This year they increased the maximum fine for the violation to $14,950.
Uh-huh.
And they collected more than $52 million in fines over the past 3 years.
Goddamn.
Yeah, anyone found traveling with a firearm in their carry-on could also lose their TSA pre-check eligibility,
mm-hmm.
need to go through more screenings going forward, or be arrested, depending on the state.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll probably also get your gun confiscated permanently. But yeah, that's not great. No points. Mm-hmm. Do you really need to be bringing a gun with you on a trip like that?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now for something that's just, well, depressing. People who researched the death penalty in the United States noted a record number of botched executions in 2022.
Yeah. Not huge numbers, but yeah, they said 7 botched execution attempts were recorded in 2022. Mm-hmm. Death penalty researchers found that mishandled incidents made up more than a third of the total number of execution attempts, a record high, mm-hmm. even as capital punishment in the U.S. remains at near a 30-year low.
Mm-hmm.
He also called the record number of botched execution attempts conservative because the data set was limited to incidents in which the prisoner was inside the execution chamber.
Mm-hmm.
There were a number of executions that were called off even before they got to the execution because of failures to comply with the state protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I believe pretty much at any point in these executions, no doctors are involved, so they have to get staff members at the prison to try to, you know, find the veins to do the IV and all that, and oftentimes cannot because they have no fucking clue what they're doing.
Yep.
Yeah, while most states permit for a physician to participate in execution, every medical association says it's unethical to do so. There's always a prison personnel who administer the lethal drug. And yeah, the executioner's lack of a medical background is among the reasons that lethal injections can be problematic.
Mm-hmm.
The training that executioners receive is another issue. Some are given prosthetic arms to practice with, but those fail to capture the complexity of the human body. Another reason why it may be difficult for staff to find a prisoner's vein is that people on death row disproportionately have health problems. I think there's even a line in here about sometimes the inmate is the one that tries to help them find the vein, because they cannot do it themselves. So yeah, it's almost like we shouldn't do this at all.
Mm.
Yeah.
And yeah, last week the Oregon Governor Kate Brown put an order for all of their state execution chamber to be dismantled and commuted sentences on all 17 people on Oregon's death row. So they would just be spending the rest of their lives in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Which I believe they have not executed anybody in a long time, maybe like twice in the past 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been probably at least 20 or 30 years since they've done it. So that's at least a good state that's trying to do it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fortunately, it's not all of them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, next up. So one of the things you need to know about antiquities, especially in Europe, is a lot of them are basically fucking stolen. Like, basically, almost everything in the British Museum is basically just straight up just stolen from places. And they're doing a hell of a time trying not to give them back. But in Germany, they announced that they're actually returning 22 Benin bronzes to Nigeria. And this is important because these bronzes are basically the historical chronicle. Like, it's literally cultural memory.
Yeah. These are things that in the old nation of Benin, it's not the current nation of Benin.
Yeah.
This is southern Nigeria. They had their big, I don't know if it'd be called castle or whatever, but they had these sort of bronzes designed whenever significant events happened that would, you know, memorialize the things that happened, you know, people, events, all that kind of stuff. And when the British and Germans and French and all these other people came down to colonize things, they said, oh, these look nice. Let's take these.
Yeah.
These are made of bronze. That's a very nice metal.
Yeah.
We would like those. And yeah, that's a whole thing. So yeah, many of these countries still have them, but you know, people in Nigeria that live where the ancient kingdom of Benin, you know, want them back because it's their history.
Because it's their shit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the thing that lets them learn more about their history and their ancestors, that kind of stuff. And yeah, the British particularly like them and oftentimes try to say like, we would take better care of them than you would, which is definitely some colonial bullshit there.
That is.
And it's also like demonstrably bullshit because they don't take very good care of a lot of that shit.
Yeah. A lot of this stuff just sits in warehouses. That kind of stuff where it's like, well, if you're not going to use it, why don't you give it back to them?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because it's ours. It was a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Like the big diamond from India.
Yeah.
That was a gift that we forcibly took for ourselves.
Yep. Ugh.
Be like if you went to somebody's house and just took a thing like, oh, thank you for the gift.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for this brand new 80-inch TV.
Yeah. But yeah. And now Elon Musk. Because he has only been the head of Twitter for what is it, like a month or a month and a half now? And yeah, he's still not done fucking it up. He made a poll on Twitter about whether or not he should step down as CEO, and he lost. Which yeah.
Well,
should I step down as CEO? You know, that I will poll. And then he lost the poll. And then he decided, you know what? Only people who are like got blue check marks should be allowed to vote in these polls.
Yeah, which is the whole thing there.
I think it was a cop out, though. I think that was a possible no egg on the face narcissist exit strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, he lost and basically says that, oh yeah, well, I'll step down, but only when I found, I think there's a better quote in this other article. I'll step down as chief executive of Twitter as soon as he finds someone foolish enough to succeed him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's certainly a way to go about it. But also that this wouldn't really change too much because he would still run the company and make decisions. And that this would just be, you know, essentially a figurehead of sorts.
Somebody who could take the fall and get fired whenever things don't go right for the stockholders.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which Twitter's probably, I don't know, doing all right as a, you know, a stock, but Tesla is taking a nosedive.
Oh, it is. It's only at this point, it's only fit to crash and burn. And I mean, the news recently came out that apparently the auto driving feature for the Teslas have led to like several collisions. And
Yep.
On the heels of the truck driver who did a very thoughtful review on the Tesla Semi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at the stock on Google. Year to date, it has gone down 69%.
Mm-hmm.
Lost 276 points and is now at $123.15 a share. So that's great. That's what stockholders like.
Yeah.
Is somebody essentially abandoning their post as head of the company so that they can be an asshole on Twitter and then lose themselves a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like peaked at like $407 US November 5th, 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like almost under a third of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's stockholders are basically revolting, asking him to step down or find new people to run the company, that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's not going to go great for him. He's going to try and run two companies at least at the same time. Because Tesla's not going great as they continue to have more callbacks for vehicles, recalls to get stuff fixed. And then that's, you know, should not have been an issue in the first place. That kind of stuff. So, yeah, this is the whole thing. And, yeah, they tried to say, like, hey, you're not going to be able to link to competing social media sites. Calling such posts as free promotion. It's like that's half of the Twitter's existence is promoting things that people are doing. You know, videos you do on YouTube or Twitter, movies, TV shows, music, articles you've written elsewhere, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's a bad thing to do. It's bad publicity. It's the whole point of this thing.
Yeah. But yeah, moving on from there, we are now deep in the non-serious part of the show. First and foremost, the owner of the Phoenix Suns and Mercury has sold his teams to Matt Ishbia.
Yeah. Or it's Ishbia.
Or Ishbia.
Yeah, a billionaire mortgage lender.
So
an upstanding person, but maybe a little less racist than... Then this guy was, I don't even have his name in here. I'm trying to see what the old owner was. Robert Sarver, who has sold his majority stake, as well as I think some of the minority stakes, for $4 billion, a record price for the NBA and WNBA. That is a big deal because these teams in the major sports here in the U.S. are the most highly valued in the world. As much as, you know, people say like soccer is the most popular sport in the world. Their teams aren't quite as valued as these are. I believe the Dallas Cowboys are the most valuable sports team in the world. And I think the Knicks are probably number two. Lakers are up there as well. But, yeah, these guys have sold the Suns and the Mercury for more than any team recently. But, yeah, Ishbia is well-known and well-regarded within the league office, including Commissioner Adam Silver, has developed relationships with a number of owners. So it seems like largely a formality to get the required background check and vote of approval from the Board of Governors. His brother and founding partner in Shore Capital will make a significant investment and serve as alternate governor. Yeah, his acquisition includes more than 50% of the teams and will include all of Sarver's interest plus a portion of that of minority partners. And yeah, that's a big deal. It's like the Brooklyn Nets sold for $2.35 billion in 2019 to Joe Tsai. The Chinese American business magnates. Yeah, the Houston Rockets sold for $2.2 billion in 2017. And of course, Steve Ballmer bought the Clippers for $2 billion in 2014. So yeah, these rich people, even at their worst moments in owning these companies, these teams, are going to make their money back and then some when they are forced to sell them. So, like, don't feel too bad for Dan Snyder.
Yeah.
He's forced to sell the Washington Commanders.
Yeah. But, yeah, now on to the entertainment show. We got a couple stories here to work up, to talk about. First and foremost, director S.S. Rajamouli has announced that he is working on a sequel to RRR, which, for any of you who have not seen that movie,
it's great.
It's amazing. It's basically a over-the-top Bollywood action movie that is just completely balls-to-the-walls crazy.
Yeah.
In the best way possible. Because remember, it's on top of being an amazing over-the-top action movie, it's also a Bollywood movie, which means it's also occasionally a musical.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's more ridiculous than any of the Fast and Furious movies, I would say. But yeah, he says that his father and screenwriter are working on the story, seriously working on the story right now with the revolutionary heroes from the first movie returning for another epic battle with the colonizing Brits.
Mm-hmm.
He assures the sequel wasn't initially in the cards, but has become more of a prospect as the film has found international success. I imagine Netflix would very much love to help fund this new movie,
because
it has been a big deal for them.
Mm-hmm.
He says he asked his father, who narrates the story to Rajamouli and others, who then write up the first draft, to immediately sit on it and expand the idea.
Mm.
So yeah. And yeah, RRR was shot over 320 days as his most expensive film to date and one of the priciest Indian films ever made, mm-hmm. with an estimated budget of $66 million.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a lot of good work with that money.
Mm.
Yeah, I believe they are up for an Oscar in the international category.
And I hope they win it, because the movie is friggin' incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah,
if you haven't seen it, Teresa, definitely watch it.
Yeah, I think I need to.
It is long. We will just warn you.
3 hours, but it doesn't feel like it.
Nope. It's a Bollywood movie. Bollywood movies tend to be a little on the lengthy side.
Yeah, but yeah, the RRR referred to the three main acts of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll tell you what each of them means when you get to it.
Mm-hmm.
The only real nitpick is that some of the CG for the animals is not great, but mm-hmm. it works.
Yeah.
It works.
And finally, we got some trailers. We got an official trailer for Oppenheimer, which of course is a biopic about J. Robert Oppenheimer, the man who helped develop the atomic bomb.
Yeah, this is Christopher Nolan's new movie.
Mm-hmm.
With all the good and bad that comes out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just kind of a very weird-ass movie.
Yeah.
From what it's looking like. It stars Cillian Murphy as J. Robert Oppenheimer. Mm-hmm. And Emily Blunt is his wife. Matt Damon portrays General Leslie Groves Jr.,
mm-hmm.
director of the Manhattan Project, and Robert Downey Jr. plays Louis Strauss, a founding commissioner of the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's going to be out July 21st. Be a big summer movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And finally, last but not least, we got an official trailer for Netflix's The 90s Show, and oh God, this seems so superior to the 80s show. It's not even funny.
Well, good.
Yeah. Yeah. That looks really nice. Yeah, this looks really nice. Especially Kitty is like, oh, I'm going to go get Fritos and Tostitos and Doritos and all the Eatos.
Yeah.
She's excited to have kids around to, look after and all that. As they have Leia. The daughter of Eric and Donna Foreman.
Yeah, and you see her in her behavior. It's like, yeah, that's definitely Eric's daughter.
Yeah, and then the kid from what's her name? What their names? Mia Kunis and
Kelso. Kelso and I forgot what Mila Kunis' character. Yeah.
So their kid is also involved here as well.
Yep.
Like they have a normal name.
Yeah. And they're friends,
Yeah. And they made some friends in town.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. And yeah, of course they are like, oh yeah, you guys can hang out in the basement and deal with all this. And then they find the stash.
Yeah.
And then, that kind of stuff. So yeah,
And of course, Red's like, why are you doing this shit again?
Because she likes having kids around.
Yeah. Whereas, and for the record, a lot of the members from the old cast will be making appearances as well.
Except for the one that...
Except for Hyde, for obvious reasons.
Fez seems to be running a hair salon.
Yeah, because let's be honest, that's the only way that storyline would have ended.
Tommy Chong shows up.
Yep.
So he's hanging around doing his thing. I forget.
And of course, Eric and Donna are still around.
As well as the other two. So,
mm-hmm. Which I think is part of why one of the reasons this show will probably succeed better is that You know, it actually, like, has a bunch of the old cast involved, unlike the 80s show, which only vaguely was connected to that 70s show.
Right, or like the last season of Scrubs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so...
Yeah, that'll be out January 19th, so okay. A month away.
Anyway, so that is going to be our show for the week and our last show of the year. We are going to be taking, you know, New Year's off and everything, so, you know, we can get over the hangover. but, yeah, so in the meantime, if you got a question or comment or something you want us to be on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for it in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can get our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, wishing you and yours a fun, enjoyable, and most of all, safe holiday. You know, if you're going to drink, be responsible about it. Don't get behind the wheel. And try not to get in too many fights with the family. not because necessarily because, you know, you're blood related, but because you don't really need that drama. Pick and choose your battles. That's my philosophy in life. Yeah, so we are going to wind it down. That is going to be it for 2022. We will be seeing you again in 2023, you know, if the world doesn't blow up or anything. And if it does,
it was a good run.
Yeah, it was a good run. See you on the other side, whatever. but anyway, thank you for listening, and we will see you all next year. Goodbye, everybody.